This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Last week, I played the first half of the interview with Melissa Davies on her story of abuse at the hands of the state. This is a story spanning more than 20 years. Last week, we heard about her daughter Jess's harrowing experience of uplift, appalling living conditions, sexual abuse which led to teen pregnancy, then addiction, and a brutal life at the hands of a gang-affiliated partner. Prison, grandchildren, now with Melissa, and finally release for Jess as she reunites with her family. You would have thought this is where this story should have had a positive conclusion. In part two, you'll hear about what confronts Melissa as she tries to keep this family together and how those acting in bad faith are determined to tear them apart.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. The following interview contains topics that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If you would like to contact us in regards to any of our content, please email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. That's inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check Radio with Marie. I am talking to Melissa Davies with this incredible story, and we've talked about your daughter, the abuse that she had in state care, and the children that she's gone and since had. Mm-hmm. We are now at a time your daughter and her partner are serving time in prison. You have got your four grandchildren. You've got your own beautiful daughter as well, your second daughter, five of you at home. And there was probably a period, I'm looking at the timeline now, a period of peace for all of you. Talk me through that time. Talk me through that time, you being a grandmother raising grandchildren as well as a mum. How was that? How was that time for all the kids and yourself?
Just the most incredible feeling in the world that I know in my heart that I got to a place I've saved these children, literally saved them. If I could describe what they were removed from myself, not from a ringer, tamariki or sis. So I removed these children into care and protection into my own life and gave them a life that they never knew, you know. So things were doing pretty outstanding, I have to say. They went from these underweight, deprived children. My granddaughter, literally in the court documents, that was evidence that was brought out with the father and the mother of abuse, was about how my granddaughter had so much dirt and filth in her hair that it took nearly a week to get rid of it. So the worst of the worst neglect you could ever imagine. But what I keep coming back to is that the abuser, which was the father, he's still to this day got no idea of what he's done, nothing. So my daughter was just this beaten, bashed, abused woman from the day she was removed from my care to the day, like literally to now. She's still traumatized. She's still struggling, but, you know, doing amazing. And that's thanks to this agency. If I wasn't in her life, I don't know where she'd be right now. But going back to, sorry, your question was.
No, so you're at home. You've now got, there's a period that of calm that ensues. You're raising the grandchildren. You're raising your daughter. And you're doing, I guess, what every parent and grandparent does. You bring in help when you need help because you're obviously still working. And this, again, is where life takes a cruel turn for you because you bring in help in the form of a nanny or a babysitter.
The nanny, and I'm going to say a name, but you can block it if you want to. So her name was Curry. I basically had a distant, very distant relative that was the one person that decided that she wanted to have Noah, the baby, her own gain, I guess. So what we've got is a woman that literally came into my life and she moved in as a live-in nanny. The first night I met her, she said, I've made 9 notifications to a ringer tamariki about, you know, obviously she also talked about, yeah, having a media involvement and ready to go live about how, in terms of false evidence, but proven now, that about allegations of children that she's aware of with families. So her whole motivation was to, yeah, was to get a child or children for herself. So what we've got is the easy option. So in New Zealand, you've got the ability for a mother or a couple to look on the wait list for adoption or getting a child for
foster child.
Foster child. It's not ever going to happen. You know, you're looking at 19 years minimum, and then it's, so what you've got is this woman, Curry, that basically came to my home as the nanny that was introduced through the notifier. Okay, that's where this fits. And she has done 9, and this has been proven through my official information, is that she did 9 previous notifications. So this woman came into my life and with the intention to obviously
secure a child.
Yeah. So there was a deal that went on between Rachel Curry. So Rachel only wanted the baby. Curry only wanted Ethan and Paul. So you've got the sadistic.
Okay, so hold on. Just let me just get this straight in my head. You've got these two women, one of which is a contact of yours, which is Rachel. Mm. Both of them colluded together because they wanted to be able to essentially, in their minds, forcibly uplift and adopt children of their own, and they saw your grandchildren as their opportunity to take these boys for themselves.
100%, yeah.
Now wow.
The reality that you've got this frightening prospect that with this organisation, Aranga Tamariki, see, you, like I said to Bex, you can get a disgruntled neighbour, or you could get an ex-partner or someone that just wants to have vengeance, and that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with the unconscionable action of citizens of this country that have so much power. So there's no evidence needed or required, because the reason, if we move forward, and I'm not sure how because I'm moving forward so much now, but when my grandchildren were taken from my care, you've got to identify the motivation and look at the notifiers and look at the facts. Yeah.
Let's tease that out. So here you are, you've got your grandchildren, you've got your daughter, you have this nanny helping you out, live-in nanny. Mm. You're completely unaware of the jiggery-pokery that is going on by these women in the background. You're finally thinking that you've got some peace, that everything is working beautifully. Mm. Explain to me now, describe to me the trauma of the uplift of those children, because that in itself is, I think, quite important. So explain to us how you're going along thinking everything is merry, this is going on in the background, and then the children are then taken from you very suddenly.
Sure. So what we've got is, I've got Alia, obviously, and I've got now a new baby, which is, he's almost one. And you're dealing with, you know, grandmother that literally got up every night for 4 times a night to feed him and care for him like he was my own, and loved him and care. And the evidence are in the images, like all the photos of the loving moments that I have. You know, we've got evidence of beautiful moments with these children, until the day that Alia was at Whangaparā Primary School. And there was what they used to call a DARE program. So that's through New Zealand Police. So that was introduced to try to help children to talk about their fears, or if there's some sort of in-home abuse. I don't know if you're aware of the DARE program, but that was back in 2017, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what we're dealing with now is that we've got the DARE program introduced to this Whangaparā Primary School, and the note that Alia put into the box, which is what they're encouraged to do, is they say put into a box, every child has to do it within that program, put in that note what your worst fear is, okay? That worst fear for Alia, my granddaughter, was this. These words are here. I've got it here. So if I ever have to leave living with my nana, Melissa, I will kill myself.
Oh, Melissa, that's awful.
Well, the awful part was, what do those words mean? So effectively in my mind, and I hope most rational thinking people would say, well, that means that this child is safe. She doesn't ever want to be removed from her nana. If I ever have to be removed from my nana, Melissa, I will kill myself. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that to me says she's finally got stability in her life, and leaving your home is the worst thing imaginable.
Yeah. That's my reality, because that's my, you know, another time in my life where I've been challenged. So when you're dealing with the enormity of being brought up to the primary school at Whanga Prime, being absolutely, how can I say this, like they made me feel like I'm depriving of Alia and I'm not doing the best for her, when the words that she said was, if I ever have to leave or living with my nana, Melissa, I will kill myself. That to me, and I'll always, always believe this, is that speaks volumes about she was happy. You know, she was really happy. She was safe. She was feeling like, please don't take me. Please don't take me.
Wow. Also, in this time, you had a new relationship that was going very well. Your partner at the time had planned to sort of take you away. You had your live-in nanny. Talk me through what happened in that period of time.
Okay, so we've got my partner, which I've been with for 3 years, had decided to get engaged, and he'd been amazing in the fact that he'd actually wanted to take on these beautiful children. So he booked a trip to Melbourne with Raquel to get engaged. And so we notified the social worker, and the reason being is because the other children were in my guardianship. So it was only Noah, the baby, that was under a rangatamariki or stake here, as you call it, and that's a really disturbing fact at this moment, because the notifier that's got Noah literally is the reason why I didn't get the guardianship of Noah.
So you went away. So you, your partner, and Raquel went to Melbourne. Meanwhile, at home,
I had a qualified English nanny, which was like literally you could not have got more qualified. She was in the home.
And then another notification with Oranga Tamariki. So you're doing everything right. You're ticking all your boxes, doing everything that you could do. You heading away, having care there. I mean, there's no institutes there. But then, of course, there is now this new uplift. You've got Rachel and Kiri in the background. So walk me through how they managed now. And I think they still have the boys to this day. Is that correct? Yeah.
So what we've got is, so when we look at so we've got the notifier that's basically become the beneficiary, and that's the intention. So I can remember the clear moment that we're at the Oyster Bar and having a meal at Wynyard Quarter in Auckland, and she told me that she wanted that baby no matter what. So what we've got is a clear indication that she would do anything to make that happen. So the notifier had a serious domestic violence incident, which is proven and ignored with Oranga Tamariki, and that's the reason I left any part of her being involved in these children's life, okay? And that was in early 2017. So I decided that this woman and her partner are not in a good place to care for these children, right? And then in 2017, they were uplifted. But also just 3 months earlier, I think it was 3 months, I could, and the court documents prior to, so in the family courts, we've got Pidwell, Judge Pidwell, that said these words to me, you know, Miss Davies, you were doing, you know, the, I quote the words right out of the documents, which I've got here, okay. Judge Pidwell in the Waitakere Family Court said you were doing an exemplary job of caring for your grandchildren, all of the grandchildren, actually.
And that still did not sway Oranga Tamariki.
No, because I believe that there was an agenda at play, and I really, really feel that this is all about, yeah, the just the whole, you know, I'm calling them out. The only way you can get your children back under this organisation is to identify that you've done so much wrong. And I just can't, to this day, I can never, ever, ever believe what they've done is right. And I've seen it over and over when children get returned to parents because they'll just say, well, yeah, we could do things better. And that's their favourite words. Oranga Tamariki's words are, we could do things better.
Mm. So the children are uplifted. So that then leaves you, your partner, and Raquel at home. So they take the boys and Alia. Alia then, she'd already, I mean, that's obviously her worst nightmare coming true, as we know from that note in the box. What then happened with her? Because I think what happened with Alia, once she was uplifted and placed into this so-called state care, these are not, it's an, almost an oxymoron at this point in the story, isn't it, state care? So how did Alia fare for those next few years?
As much as I know, 100% know, there's 15 different placements. So what you're dealing with is part of the information as to the justification of the uplift is saying I can't care for Alia. And I, you know, to be really fair, I put my hand up and said, well, actually, I'm really struggling with Alia. I can deal with Noah and Ethan and Paul and Raquel, my daughter, but Alia is too traumatised with everything she's experienced with, as you know. And so I paid a private member of the public who was, his name was Brian, who he was the administrator for the Lions in Orewa, and it was $2,300 a week. That's the degree of, you know, my ability to, oh, not that, just my, what can I say? So that's, yeah, as long
your
as
commitment. It was a solid commitment. And what were you having paying Brian to do?
To care for Alia week on week, because I realised that you're dealing with Alia that was going into my daughter Raquel's bedroom with a chef's knife, trying and putting. Raquel had her friends and hair, and she put poison like substances like methylated spirits and stuff in her drinks. And, you know, it's just the enormity of the safety of my daughter and the children. And so I reached out and I said, I want to find someone outside of OT. And I did that with this man, and I paid him $2,300 a week. And when my business was compromised, this man said, well, you know, I'm going to drop off Alia. If you can't pay that amount of money, then surely, he looked at my home and he said, God, look at your house, look at your home, and surely that you can afford to put money before your grandchild. And that's a typical illustration of how things have gone for me, where everybody involved in this family, or people that are benefactors, if that makes sense. So everybody's all about follow the dollars, and, you know, the only person that hasn't benefited is me, because when this all came to a horrible reality was I had 5 properties. I'm now down to my home, and I'm struggling now to even
keep that over your head. So let's look at where things move from there. So you're struggling with Alia. You've got Rachel has now got the boys, correct?
No, she's got the one child she wanted. So that's,
which is Noah, right?
Rot, and I call it rot, in a boys' home in Papatoa, and it's called Dingwell. And you need to do research where the money goes. And that's pretty frightening. If you look at Dingwall and even the paedophilia and the money is going to Scotland, it's a beautiful beginning with the man that started Dingwall, because he started that with the intention of an orphanage, and now it's turning up to be once again part of the money laundering that's going on.
Right. So that's where the boys are at. Mm. Meanwhile, your daughter and her former partner have served their time in prison, and they come out. Now, this is the next step in the story. And if you're all sitting there listening to this at home, believe me, we're not done yet. This is the next step in the story, is that the father comes out, who is Māori.
Mm.
There is a suggestion from OT that the children should go back into care. And when we say the children, we're talking here now the boys that are at Dingwall, correct? That is Paul and Ethan.
Yep.
To their father.
The one that almost killed them.
So walk me through this passage, because meanwhile you're obviously working in the background trying to get these boys back. Dad now comes back into the scene, and there's also a shift in culture at Rangatamariki from when you were dealing with them through the 20-teens to now into the 2020s with a new element. So walk me through that, because I think that's quite an important piece of this puzzle that then throws light on some of the struggles that you've been having currently.
So the full intention is to put these children back into a Māori family rather than a Pākehā, no matter what I've done to save these children's lives. No question now. And I never, ever believed that until recently, until I've looked over the official information and actually realised there was never any chance of these children being returned back to me.
So the cultural imperative that's come from Orangatamariki is essentially in their eyes, the unsuitability of you as their primary caregiver is because you're not Māori.
So I saved their lives, and there's absolutely no question that I saved all their lives. I mean, I can say that, hand on my heart, that, you know, the children I removed from the abuse of the father, and then the, you can call it the neglect of the mother, but she had no other choice. She was just broken and battered and abused. But moving forward, it was more about the reality that you've got another child that I saved his life and is now in the care of the woman that aligns herself with the very organization that what we're dealing with is so abhorrent, that actually they will only identify Māori as being fit parents if you've got any. We're dealing with a really racial culture and a real fear that I have that I've got no hope. There is no possibility in 2017, when these children were removed from my care, they would ever come back to the Pākehā grandmother.
I mean, this is where the need of the children are not being met. So the cultural needs of an organisation were placed ahead of the needs of the child.
Yep. Look at the evidence with the two girls. Like you obviously, you know, identified in the beginning of this interview, look at the needs and the identifiable realities of my two daughters. You've got one that was taken to care. Look at the reality of her life. Look at my younger daughter that was kept in my care. She will be the most formidable force to be reckoned with in family courts. And that's attention. You know, I'm afraid of that, and I'm going to tell you why. Because the family courts are the rubber stampers of Orangatamariki. And because I recently, as I said, I made a notification, I talked to the family courts about the issues I have with the lawyer for child. Once again, another part of the taxpayers. Yeah, it's just a gravy train. It literally is of what we're dealing with now. You've got, this is what I guess The normal New Zealand citizens need to acknowledge is we're dealing with almost tyranny. It's the worst of the worst. We're dealing with the fact that our government agencies are profiling or making themselves look like they are about, I mean, in this case with child protection agencies, but the thing is for me is that these lawyers, Lawyer for Child, I mean, they're benefiting off the income they earn. Like in my case, you've got 2017 to 2024. Now you've got a grandchild, which we haven't touched on, that will now be part of her gravy chain of,
Of money. So they're working very hard to project themselves as saviours, whereas in your case, they're very much the perpetrator of this abuse. So let's look at, before we head there, because we are heading in that direction, at any time during this, has there been any remorse or apology from Oranga Tamariki?
Yeah, there was. So there was the intention with an official review, which was in 2023, Chappie Takani, Calvin Davis.
And Chappie Takani was the CEO of Oranga Tamariki at that time?
He still is, I think.
Still is.
My information I sent to him, he was pretty disturbed and communicated with me and said, well, you know, the least I can do is do an internal investigation into the, you know, obviously the processes or failed processes of this, well, the organisation, which he did. And we got elected, I got a woman called Wendy Coxhead, which was the senior investigator of Oranga Tamariki. So that was acknowledged, and she started the process early January, February 2023, and that took place until the end of last year. And all I can say is that, you know, it took me a long time to get any trust from her at all, because, you know, you've got so much failure of the state abuse, and it was really hard for me to even believe that I could trust any part of this agency, but I did. I'm embarrassed to say that I did trust her in the end, really embarrassed. And she told me that she was fully and obviously wanting to look into it, and what she did. And anyway, I guess the short version is there was recorded messages. We're dealing with 70 Zooms that we did with her that all identify that there is nothing about the uplifts, any of them, that are justified. Yeah. So why I say that is that she's put on the record, which I've got, RCR, welcome to it, that Jessica should never, ever have been uplifted from my care. She also said that they were fairly certain that the children shouldn't have been either. So what you've got is the systematic and intergenerational abuse of a failed, not-for-purpose system of a child protection agency, which is actually a social worker protection agency, nothing more.
So they protect their own interests, not the interests of the children.
Because I've had 7 years in this latest situation where they will literally lie and they'll perjure themselves, and there is no immunity. There is no way that they'll ever be exempt from the family courts. And as I previously said, I mean, you've got a situation where I did that, the inquiry about their lawyer for child, and yet the judge came back and said, well, we're not interested in looking into it because the lawyer for child job is so hard. And that's his words, or her words. And that just shows that they're all paid off, and, you know, that we've got no hope when it comes to protecting our, you know, vulnerable children.
Oh, honestly, Melissa, it's trying to unpack all of this. It's just what you've gone through is absolutely mind-blowing. And there is a nice little bit of hope here. And I think, and I do want to touch on this, and that is around Jess, because your relationship now has been rekindled with Jess. Tell me about Jess. I mean, Jess did actually get some support. She's now off methamphetamine. So tell us about where Jess is at right now, because I think that that is really hopeful for people.
Yeah, thanks so much. So last year in 2023, I became the supervisor carer of the last grandchild. Okay. And why I say ironically is, how am I not in a position to have any contact with my grandchildren? And yet I can be that with Aranga Tamariki in a different side.
And this is a new child. So Jessica had another daughter. You're now the guardian.
And supervisor.
Yeah. So Jess is now living, but she's now back with you, near you now, back in the family fold, correct?
Yeah, totally. She's amazing. Can't tell you how beautiful she is and how, you know, this is the only good news story. This is it. You've got Jess that is, can't tell you how powerful that is for me to say that, you know, she survived. She survived state abuse. She survived everything possible. And she's now here with me, embracing everything that's beautiful about the life she has. She's got an amazing little granddaughter. Yeah, her and her partner are doing an incredible job with.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Without OT interventions, so what we've got is last year, the PAMUA site of OT allocated them, OT had made me the supervisor carer of this beautiful girl.
And it's going well, yeah.
And now it means that they are no part of OT at all. So they've discharged the orders and...
Yeah, which is... wonderful news, and I'm so thrilled to hear that. Alia is now 18. She is now pregnant, so you're about to be a great-grandmother. So where is Alia? Tell us where Alia is.
Well, she's paid off in silence because she's living in a penthouse apartment paid for by Aranga Tamariki, and I would absolutely, you know, be happy to be proven wrong on that.
And the two boys, Ethan and Paul, are they still at Dingwall House?
They're still at Dingwall. And,
is there any hope of Jess and her partner to be able to get custody of the boys now that her life is settled?
Of course there should be, but yeah, probably not, because yeah, I think it's all about silencing. I really believe that Jess and Tim would do amazing. Now their life is together and sorted, but yeah, I don't believe that there is any chance, and that's my heart of hearts. I believe that OT will do anything to stop those children coming back to this family, because it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be too confronting for them.
And finally, Noah.
Well, Noah should never be with that woman. She is just a hideous example of how Aranga Tamariki allow people to,
make
a notification, to get your, to make any evidence you like and then get the child. I mean, how easy is that?
Yeah. You have given evidence now at two inquiries. I mean, this is obviously still unresolved because there are three children and one young adult soon to have her own child in OT care in one form or another. Where to from here? Do you believe that you've got any recourse with OT? Do you have any political support? What have you been able to ascertain since delivering? And, I mean, that commission, that report is out. It was damning. So it's out in the public space that this sort of stuff is going on. Where are you at now moving forward with all of this?
Zero. Yeah, absolutely hopeless. Yeah, I think that for me it's more about I've tried. I've done everything possible, humanly possible, to expose the enormity of the cruelty and the... malfeasance of social workers and the ability for this organisation to hide behind this pretend child protection agency. So no, I'd have to say I've gone to the Waitangi Tribunal, I've gone to the latest Royal Commission into Inquiry, and they've all just been in horror of my story. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, so where to from now? Yeah.
And in terms of Karen Shaw, who I know that you've had a little bit to do with, just walk me through a little bit there in terms of interactions you've had with her and what you have on record with Karen.
So Karen Shaw came to my home, I think, in 2000. I need to confirm the date, but well before, when she was an ACT backbencher, and she was in tears, emotionally disturbed about my story. And she said to me, you know, Melissa, I can't do anything unless I'm in the, you know, forefront of Parliament and I need to be in the elected.
Well, she's there now.
Yep. Well, she's failed.
Yeah.
She's so failed. So we've got four conversations that I'd like to talk about, which is number one. So we talk about weekly, probably bi-weekly, twice a week, we talk about conversations between her and I about what's going on. And so from the moment she left my home in tears and looked at the environment these children were taken from, she was so alarmed. And she said to me, just need to help you, I need to help you. And then obviously as an ACT backbencher, she said, I can't do anything, I really can't. But the reality is she's done worse for me as this family than you can ever imagine, because she went from that conversation, we'd talk probably, and I've got phone records, so happy to call her out on this. So I'd talk to her maybe text or phone calls twice a week. And what you've got is I kept having that momentum until she contacted me. We'd communicated when she came into government, which I was so happy about, really, really happy, thinking, gosh, we've got a real reality for change. And then from there, so that's number one. Number two was that she then called me literally the day she was appointed as the Minister of Children. And how is that possible that this woman has made those communications and contacted me? And yeah, so Minister of Children. And then she told me again on the record that I will do everything I can. I'll make sure those children get out of state care. Yeah, and then we've now got bullying tactic that she told me that one of the third or fourth conversations that she's feeling so bullied by the management of OT. Hmm.
And she's the minister in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So the OT tail is wagging the ministerial dog. Well, Melissa, I just really hope that you do get reunited with your grandchildren. I really do. I hope that if you're listening to this now, out there, people, share this. Petition your MP, petition the Ministry for Children. If you're somebody who's hearing this thinking, oh my gosh, I thought it was only us, if you're also in a similar situation at the hands of OT, please reach out, inbox@realitycheck.radio. We will be reaching out to the Minister's office for comment, and we'll see whether the Minister has anything that she'd like to address with us. And Melissa, I just really want to thank you and thank Doug, who's been supporting you through this, for giving us your time and for being so strong and telling us the story, because I can, as I said before, I can't imagine what you and your family have gone through. And actually, as I started right at the beginning of this conversation, I said, this is very much the tale of two daughters. You now finally have Jess back. She's got a lovely partner. She's clean. She's got a beautiful daughter. So it's just a lovely ending there. Your daughter, Raquel, from what I can gather, has been your rock through all of this. Tell us what lovely Raquel is up to.
Incredible. So you've got the one child that wasn't taken. Yeah. She lived her entire life Yeah, just had a beautiful life, lived on the beach. All of my recollection was that she just enjoyed every part of what children should do. You know, the very reality that all these children were deprived of. So she lived on the beach, she'd swim, and she was amazing with football, basketball. She was in the Eames team for their football in New Zealand. She was, yeah, just netball, incredible netball player. She got to a place that she went to Westlake Girls because I sadly didn't have the money to send her to a private school. But, man, she really, really was sensational. She really did. She thrived. And, you know, to this day, she came home, she's just gone flatting actually, which is really hard for me, just weeks ago. And she came home and she said to me, "Mum, I want to stay." And she's tonight, and she was there 9 days later. You know, that's what we're dealing with, is that this is what real families are about. And the fact is, she is my success story. I have nothing else. You know, Jess is actually now my success story, because I brought her out from the depths of the darkness of this agency. And I know, I mean, she's just living 5 minutes away and we talk all day long, but I need to help her to heal. And, you know, you can't even imagine what this agency that appears on the surface to be about protecting children can destroy. And literally, yeah, it's unbelievable evidence that we've got a government that just does not hold any agency to account. Like, whether, like you say, about the health or the, you know, we're dealing with the atrocities. And like Mike Ferris said, CCHR, and he kept saying, "Melissa, what you're dealing with is you're dealing with like Nazi Germany." And that's my reality. And I believe that is that, you know, they won't go into the gang homes. They won't go into the homes that children are most vulnerable. They'll go into the protective parents and grandparents. It's a grab up. It's a grab of children to justify this $1.4 billion industry that we've, as a taxpayer organisation, have to deal with. And that's nothing short of, yeah, the reality of this country's about. We've got to start looking at what matters. And when the Royal Commission of Inquiry talks about this agency needs to be disbanded, I believe in my heart of hearts that they need, these social workers, supervisors, managers need to reapply, get sacked, reapply for their jobs, and get it community-based, and get it to a point that we've got an agency that genuinely cares, not about the, you know, like I said, the billion-dollar industry that it's now become. That it's a child trafficking industry, really and truly. It really is.
Yeah. Well, look, particularly in your case, I mean, especially with young Noah. Just a couple of little clarifications. One, to Raquel, Melissa is studying law. She wants to become a family lawyer, which I think is going to be amazing. We'll have to watch out for her in the future. Mike Ferris, you've mentioned him several times across this interview. CCHR, for those, what does CCHR stand for?
He's been an incredible, amazing part of my journey. Citizens Human Rights Commission, I think.
Oh, yep. Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
So he was involved in the Lake Alice exposure, and he's been a really close friend of mine all the way through. Yes, he's at the point of exasperation in terms of my journey.
Yes, and I know that we definitely want to talk to Mike and probably talk with you with Mike. I'd love to talk to both of you around actually specifically the commission and the findings and the inquiry, and because I think that's going to be a whole other hour of what tangibly should and could happen but maybe what will happen, we don't know. So I'd love, that's another conversation that we certainly want to have. Well, Melissa, I just want to thank you for your time today. You have done so incredibly well. This can't be easy for you. I wish you all the best. I really do hope that you're able to get those grandbabies back in your care, or at least Jess can get her children back in her care very soon. Now, do stay in touch. We will definitely keep in touch with this. Anyone, as I said before, if you're listening to this story and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I thought it was just me, do reach out, inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear your story as well, because I think that this, what Melissa has outlined, is sadly the tip of an iceberg with Oranga Tamariki. I think that there is a pattern of behaviour there that is unfortunately not only creating havoc in your family, Melissa, but many other families up and down this country. So I want to thank you again for your time. As mentioned earlier, part one is available for replay or download from our RCR app, or just go to realitycheck.radio. We reached out both to Oranga Tamariki and the Minister for Children, Karen Chua. Oranga Tamariki respectfully declined comment, and we've yet to have any response from the Minister's office. In light of yesterday's apology by the government to those victims at the hands of state care, I can't help but feeling that without affirmative action, these are nothing but hollow words. Melissa and her partner chose not to attend, as they're still victims of this abuse. Karen Chua, Minister, if you're listening, I'd love to discuss this with you. How to mend this obviously broken system. Why a daughter who was happy and attending one of the best schools in the country never attended school again after her uplift. Or how her daughter, now also in your system, missed 3 years of her own schooling due to Oranga Tamariki's care. Let's talk this out, Minister, and see how we can truly help these families heal. You have our email. You know how to reach out to us. Many of you, of course, did reach out to us after Melissa's interview last week. And here are some of your thoughts. Oh, my heart is breaking for this family, sending my deepest compassion. Also from text, Jesus, Marie. Mortified, listening with my jaw on the floor, the whole interview. Much love and healing to Jessica. I'm so sorry this happened to you. From Amanda. I'm not sure how she let this happen to her daughter. This sort of thing doesn't happen in a normal, loving family situation. I would never let the government take my child away from me. Surely she knows that this is her fault too. Joe. Actually, Joe, there's so much more to this story. And believe me, Melissa has turned over every stone and fought like a lion to protect her child. It has actually been the uphill battle against the state. And this is what the story is all about, how the state has crushed her. But even after more than 20 years, she is still going. So believe me, she is working so hard to keep her family together. From Facebook, from Vicky, I'm listening to this. Why do I feel I'm not surprised at the appalling system run by the government of today? These ads you see about stop family abuse is just a joke. The counsellor, I hope, was fired for what she has now ruined so many lives. And from Linda, was very hard to listen to. However, this is the life and lives of mothers and children. We're neglected and ruined and never the same again by a system that should have done better. I'll be waiting to hear part two next week. From Rebecca, a heart-wrenching story. I'm feeling sickened listening to it. And from Judith, what's such a sad conversation. Lindley said, sounds heart-wrenching and I haven't even heard it yet. And from Mega T, I listened to this today. I know our institutions aren't perfect, but I was stunned at how inadequate, corrupt, and ineffective they are of actually helping those who need it. I was so impressed by Melissa's love for her daughter and her determination to be there for her no matter what. I have such admiration for Melissa. What she was put through is completely unacceptable. Thank you, Melissa, for sharing your story, and to you, Marie, for your sensitivity and interviewing skills.
Well, thank you very much for that. And that is just a snippet of what we received on Maliza's interview. Thank you for everybody who sent in your thoughts for her angel prayers as well. It was greatly appreciated by her and by us as well. If you'd like to actually share your thoughts on part two of this interview, or even to the apology yesterday by the government for the abuse in state care, please text us. 2057 is the number. Or inbox at realitycheckradio is the email address.
Do you want to be part of something that's big, that matters, and that's making a difference? The RCR Foundation Members Club is here. Get exclusive benefits and the knowledge you're supporting truth and freedom in the media. All the details are on our website at www.realitycheck.radio/members and see how you can join the mission that's making a difference.